This is Tofu Day with another edition of Between the Covers of Literature Quickie on your community radio station WCOM, FM, Chapel Hill, and Carborough. I'm glad to have today in the studios with us the author of Saxophone Colossus, The Life and Music of Sonny Rollins. Wow, what a tome. Mr. Levy, you've created a great history of one of the greatest saxophone players ever, Sonny Rollins. Tell us a little bit about Sonny, where he came from, and what his story is today.
Thank you so much, Tofu Day, for having me. It's really just a pleasure to be here and to speak to all of you. Sonny Rollins was born on September 7th, 1930, in Harlem, in New York City. And he grew up in Harlem and then in a neighborhood called Sugar Hill that people might recognize from the lyrics to Take the A Train by Duke Ellington and Billy Strayhorn. You must take the A train up to Sugar Hill in Harlem. That's where Sonny grew up. He is one of the greatest jazz improvisers of all time, and many people would say the greatest living improviser. He's still alive. He's 92 years old.
Right, and you know, he played with everybody. I mean, Coltrane, Miles, Monk, of course. Monk was born in North Carolina, but Monk never liked North Carolina. He moved up to the city, and I believe Thelonious Monk was a mentor, if I remember right in your book, to Sonny Rollins when Sonny was still in high school in New York City. Is that accurate?
That is absolutely accurate. And Sonny first met Thelonious Monk through a friend of his named Lowell Lewis, who was a trumpeter. And Lewis never became better known except for through his connection to Sonny's peer group. They had a band together that they called the Counts of Bop. And they really developed the bebop language into something that has come to be known as hard bop. So Sonny was instrumental in that. And so much of his training came through Thelonious Monk. He considered Monk to be his guru, and that cut from music across to spirituality.
Yeah, and as I understand also, Sonny took some spiritual breaks from music at different times in his life. I'm not sure of the exact spirituality that he was into, but that seemed to be important to him. You want to clue me in on that? Like, he took about, at least in your book, two times when he sort of withdrew from the public, if that's the right term, to dig into his spiritual side. Tell us a little bit about that side of Sonny Rollins.
Well, in 1959, Sonny became disillusioned with the music scene and with his own performance. He was winning all of the jazz polls. Everybody thought that he was the greatest tenor saxophonist of his generation. And he made the surprising decision to step away from the music scene. Nobody knew where he was. In the pre-digital age, of course, you could still vanish. And it turned out that he was practicing 15 or 16 hours a day on the Williamsburg Bridge. Many people thought it was the Brooklyn Bridge or the George Washington Bridge. It was, in fact, the Williamsburg Bridge. And he was working on his music technique. He was working also, though, on his physical health, his mental health, his spiritual health. He was doing chin-ups out there on the bridge. He was like the Postal Service, rain, sleet, or snow out there. And it really became a legend, Sonny practicing on the bridge. But it's a legend of a legendary work ethic.
Yeah, and he was a hard worker. He also went through some troubled times. And there's another North Carolina connection I want to ask you about, because my buddy here on community radio, Larry Thomas, does a wonderful jazz show. He's our sort of jazz aficionado. And he's into this guy from North Carolina out in Wilmington called Lee Morgan. And I understand that about the same time in the 50s, both Lee Morgan and Sonny Rollins, I don't know if it was exactly the same time, but you recount in your book, Saxophone Colossus, The Life and Music of Sonny Rollins, how at one time in the 50s, he had to go in for some drug treatment. And the only real facility for that type of thing federally was in Lexington. And Lee Morgan, jazz man from North Carolina, was also at about that same time in that facility. That must have been a hard period for Sonny Rollins in his life.
Well, a hard period in a sense, and we could consider this Sonny's first sabbatical from music, in which he decided that he wanted to clean up his lifestyle. He was inspired by his mother, who always stood by him, but also by Charlie Parker. When Charlie Parker recorded with Sonny under the name Charlie Chan in 1953 on Miles Davis Collector's Items, Parker thought that Sonny had gotten his message not to follow in his footsteps, that he was clean at that recording session. It turned out he was not, and somebody on the session told Bird this information. When Sonny saw Bird's face fall, he knew at that moment that he would have to clean himself up. So he made the decision to do that. It took him a little bit to finally get there, but he decided to voluntarily go to Lexington, Kentucky, at one of the first drug rehabilitation centers in the country. And it had so many jazz musicians there. Lee Morgan, I think, was there for a time. But when Sonny was there, Clifford Jordan was there, the great tenor saxophonist. And Sonny was one of the few to come out of that facility and not relapse. He stayed clean for the rest of his life.
Yeah, and recently also, you know, Sonny, you said, is now 92 years old. So I could understand how at a point, boy, it's hard. He was one of the most prolific live performers, I think, ever. I mean, he just went like nonstop for most of his life. But when he reached, I guess it was maybe 5-6 years ago, if I have it right, into his 80s, he decided, look, I can't keep working like this live. And he moved up to Woodstock, New York, as I understand it. And he's now sort of taking a well-deserved rest from the live performing. I mean, it's hard for him now. So what is his life like now as a senior statesman, let's say, of the jazz world?
Well, he's very deep into his spiritual pursuits now, and he's very much following the golden rule. I have to say that when Sonny did retire from live performance and recording, it was against his will. He was diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis about 10 years ago, and he tried to play as long as he possibly could, because it really is his lifeblood, but he couldn't do it anymore. He was very close to 9/11, to Ground Zero. He had an apartment about 6 blocks away from the World Trade Center, and he got stuck there on 9/11 and breathed in much of that debris. This very likely resulted in that diagnosis of pulmonary fibrosis. So it was very difficult for him to accept that he wouldn't be able to perform anymore, but he finally did come to a level of acceptance and realized through his spiritual endeavors that, as he would say, it's all good. He's into right now promoting the golden rule, and he's starting a nonprofit organization to support living by the golden rule and to spread that gospel among musicians. And it's something that he's borrowed from all the great religious spiritual traditions. I also want to just point out that over the course of his 7-decade career, he played with so many people from North Carolina, but a few that I'll name. We brought up Thelonious Monk, born in North Carolina, but also Max Roach from New Land, John Coltrane, High Point.
Yes, sir.
I mean, there are just many North Carolina connections, and I will actually be coming to North Carolina this February with Piedmont Jazz Alliance.
Okay, well, we're happy to hear that, and because I wanted to point out that all his life, Sonny Rollins was also into not only the golden rule, which I believe, if I'll paraphrase, is really treat others as though you would like them to treat you. But he was into civil rights and social justice as well. And that's important to us here at Community Radio. And I just wanted to throw that in at the end. Any last words you want to point out in that regards in terms of Sonny Rollins, the saxophone colossus, and his life?
Well, Sonny has always been a part of the civil rights struggle ever since he was 4 years old, marching up Lenox Avenue with his grandmother in support of figures like Paul Robeson or the Scottsboro Boys. And in 1958, he decided to make an explicit statement to the jazz scene in his album Freedom Suite. And he wrote the liner notes for that, in which he claims that throughout American history, the black artist has been pivotal to American culture. But though he exemplifies the humanities in his very existence, he has been rewarded with inhumanity. And I'm paraphrasing a bit, but it's a beautiful statement that Sonny wrote for that album, Freedom Suite. and it's something that he has continued to exemplify in his very existence through to today.
Thank you, Mr. Levy, author of Saxophone Colossus, The Life and Music of Sonny Rollins and Freedom Suite. That would be a good place for any of our listeners to start if they haven't heard his music yet. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Again, this is Tofu Dave, another edition of Between the Covers, a Literature Quickie on your community of radio station, WCOM-FM, Chapel Hill and Harborough.